She must have done it, too, because a second or so later, Ned and I were yanked backward like a couple of well-hooked fish. I went down again and banged my head, aware that the pulse and the hum had merged, had turned into a howl that seemed to be drilling a hole in my brain. The Buick had begun flashing like a neon sign, and a flood of green-backed beetles came tumbling out of the blazing trunk. They struck the floor, scuttered, died. The suction took hold yet again, and we started moving back toward the Buick. It was like being caught in a hideously strong undertow. Back and forth, back and forth.
"Help me!" I shouted in Ned's ear. "You have to help me or we're going in!"
What I was thinking by that time was that we were probably going in whether he helped me or not. He was blind but not deaf and had decided he wanted to live. He put his sneakered feet down on the cement floor and shoved backward just as hard as he could, his skidding heels splashing up little flurries of spilled gasoline. At the same time, Arky and Stephanie Colucci gave the rope another hard tug. We shot backward almost 5 feet toward the door, but then the undertow grabbed hold again. I was able to wrap a bite of slack rope around Ned's chest, binding him to me for better or worse. And then we were off again, the Buick taking back all the ground we'd gained and more. It moved us slowly, but with a terrible relentlessness. There was a breathless, claustrophobic pressure in my chest. Part of it was being wrapped in the rope. Part of it was the sense of being pinched and petted and jerked by a huge, invisible hand. I didn't want to go into the place I'd seen, but if we got much closer to the car, I would. We both would. The closer we got, the more the force pulling us stacked up. Soon it would snap the yellow nylon rope. The two of us would fly away, still bound together. Into that sick, purple throat we'd go, and into whatever lay beyond it.
"Last chance!" I screamed. "Pull on three! 1, 2, 3!
Arky and Stephanie, standing shoulder to shoulder just outside the door, gave it all they had. Ned and I pushed with our feet. We flew backward, this time all the way to the door before that force seized us yet again, pulling us as inexorably as a magnet pulls iron filings. I rolled over on my side.
"Ned, the doorframe! Grab the doorframe!"
He reached blindly out, extending his left arm fully. His hand groped.
"To your right, kid," Steph screamed. "Your right."
He found the door jamb and gripped. Behind us, there was another monstrous purple flash from the Buick, and I could feel the pull of the thing ratchet up another notch. It was like some hideous new gravity. The rope around my chest had turned into a steel band, and I couldn't get a single inch of fresh breath. I could feel my eyes bulging and my teeth throbbing in their gums. My guts felt all in a plug at the base of my throat. The pulse was filling up my brain, burning out conscious thought. I began slipping toward the Buick again, the heels of my shoes skidding on the cement. In another moment, I would be sliding, and a moment after that I'd be flying like a bird sucked into a jet turbine engine. And when I went, the boy would go with me, likely with splinters of the door jamb sticking out from under his fingernails. He would have to come with me. My metaphor about chains had become literal reality.
"Sandy, grab my hand!"
I craned my neck to look and wasn't exactly surprised to see Huddy Royer, and behind him Eddie. They'd come back. It had taken them a little longer than it had taken Arky, but they'd come. And not because Steph had radioed them at Code D, either. They'd been in their personals, and radio communications out of our barracks were FUBAR, for the time being anyway. No, they had just come.